depending on water and environment. And we will serve as a subcommittee for the purpose of taking testimony until we have a quorum. And I will open the public hearing on House Bill 3062, 3065, 3075, and 3076, because many persons are here to speak to all of those. So, Representative Wilson, would you like to come forward? And Ms. McNitt, do you have any preliminary remarks you want to make about the measures?
Madam Chair and members, I think instead of reading the summary in the record, I'll just allow Representative Wilson to summarize and move on from there.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I am Carl Wilson, District 49, State Representative, Grants Pass, Cave Junction, two-thirds of Josephine County, Oregon. I want to thank you for hearing these bills today. I know all the committees are extremely busy, and I know that yours is no exception. I want you to know how much I've come to appreciate the hearing process here, being the chair of the General Government Committee. And I am happy to have you in attendance today and to have your ear inclined to what I think is an extremely important issue. It is certainly important to me, and it is important to most of my constituents. A little background, I have lived in Grants Pass since 1957. In that time, I've seen the town go from a very sleepy little hamlet to a going concern. It has been a great place to live for years and continues to be so. I remember back in 1957, the early 60s, the 70s, when the thought of Savage Rapids Dam, the Grants Pass Irrigation District, ever being the subject of contention would be an amazing thing to anyone. More precisely, as we begin today, I would like to thank you for beginning our hearings today with 3062, defining stored natural flow. I do have a hard time understanding how that we can pretend that the reservoir capacities of the giant Lost Creek Reservoir and the sizable Applegate Reservoir simply do not exist when calculating natural flow. So I invite you to listen closely to our testimony today, as I know you will. I would appreciate you giving Mr. Becklin an opportunity to work through these bills individually and in detail, and that he and Mr. Cobble will be carrying the mail today for the irrigation district in these issues. So once again, thank you very much. I do want to say in closing, it would have been much easier for me as a state representative in a small community to dodge a very contentious issue. I think all of you know politics well enough. You know how easy that is to do. But sometimes some things are so important in your own community that you feel that you must take the political heat to do what is right. So I have chosen to side with a certain group. Although I have wonderful friends on both sides of the issue, I think only one side has their facts correct, and that would be the side that I represent today, that of the Grants Pass Irrigation District, Mr. Becklin, and those thoughts brought to us by Mr. Cobble today. So I appreciate the opportunity to do this. I've got to run the Education Committee, but thanks again for your attention to this.
Thank you, Representative Wilson, and we apologize for the delay.
No problem.
Thank you. Mr. Becklin?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dennis Becklin. Today, I want to avoid confusing you too much by the three different hats that I'll be wearing. I come to you today as the chairman of the Grants Pass Irrigation District. I will also separately testify today as the chairman of the Savage Rapids Dam Task Force that was appointed by Governor Kitzhaber and that met throughout 1996. And finally, I will testify today as the director of Sportfish Heritage, which is a foundation that I have started serves the purpose of advocacy for sport fish and sport fishing. And as I go through the four individual bills today, I'll make sure that I direct for you the direction from which I am providing testimony. With regard to House Bill 3062, this bill today is a direct outgrowth of the revelations that came to the Savage Rapids Dam Task Force during 1996. Staff members from the Oregon Water Resources Department, who were also staff to the task force, described for the task force what is known as the theory of natural flow. This is a theory that remains a mystery to most people because, frankly, I don't think it's been explained to most. It may even come as a surprise to you. So I think that in addition to the testimony that I offer this morning, it would be very helpful if a member of the Water Resources Department does testify today, that perhaps they can provide you from the department's perspective what the theory of natural flow means to them and how it is they apply the theory of natural flow in the decisions that they make with regard to water allocation. From a layman's point of view, the surprise is that the theory of natural flow presumes that there is no supplemented flow in the Rogue River. Now, we've only studied issues that relate to the Rogue, but in all probability, the theory is applied any place there is stored flow that is released later on during the drier months of the summer. In effect, the presumption is made by the Water Resources Department that the actual amount of water that is in the river at any time is equivalent to the amount of water that is flowing into Lost Creek Reservoir. So that during the summer months, when there are demands for irrigation water and other uses of water from the Rogue River, the Water Resources Department, in effect, makes its determinations about availability based on how much water is flowing into our reservoirs rather than the amount of supplemented flow that is really going down the river. This clearly defies human logic. What we need, I believe, if we are to appropriate water effectively in the state, is that we need to recognize that when facilities like those operated by the Corps of Engineers, and on our river there are two, the Applegate Project and the Lost Creek Project. Lost Creek by itself has a storage capacity of 465,000 acre-feet of water. It is nearing the full stage today, and is typically filled by about the 1st of May. Throughout the period from the 1st of November until early in May, the Corps of Engineers is in control of the river in total. One of the things that I think you need to understand, and hopefully the entire legislature will understand, is that from the 1st of May until the end of October, discharges that come out of the reservoir at Lost Creek and at Applegate are actually mandated by the Oregon Water Resources Department. Now, the Corps can override those in the event of an emergency, but the Water Resources Department meets with a variety of agencies typically toward the latter part of the year, in other words, the beginning of a new water year in October and November. It would include the Corps and the ODSW and those who have both conservation and use concerns about water. And ultimately, Water Resources provides the Corps with a schedule of desired flows. Nobody else has responsibility for the amount of water that is flowing in our river, nor does anyone else or any other agency have responsibility for meeting our scenic flow minimums other than the State of Oregon Water Resources Department. Now, if you'll go to page 2 of the testimony that I've provided for you, there is very graphic evidence of the importance of this issue. I have collected, as a result of 4 years of study, every piece of statistical data about the Rogue River, its flows, and its fish. I think I have the most extensive library of information that anyone or any agency has. Furthermore, I fault many of the agencies for having the data but never having looked at it nor studied it. So I'm going to provide a couple of snippets of the study that I've done. On page 2, this is a graph that shows for each month of August from 1940 through 1997, the average rate of flow of the Rogue River at Grants Pass for that month. Typically, the month of August is the driest month of the season. That is to say, there would be the least amount of natural flow coming into Lost Creek Reservoir. There would be the least amount of natural flow down the little tributaries that contribute to flows in the Rogue. But isn't it interesting to note that if you look at the first part of the graph, from 1940 through approximately 1956, this was a period of severe drought in our region. The average rate of flow in the Rogue River at Grants Pass was typically in the range of about 400 cubic feet a second. Now, our weather changes abruptly in what is known as decadal oscillations. Right about 1957, we moved from a period of drought to a period of wet, cool weather. You can see that beginning in that year, the natural flow, this is before Lost Creek existed, the natural flow of the river took an immediate jump upward, and the river itself was typically running anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 cubic feet a second, until we reached the period in 1977 when Lost Creek Lake was completed. I want to direct you to the third part of the graph. Note that the lines are much taller on the graph. I think all of you will recall that the state of Oregon, and certainly Southwest Oregon was no exception, the state of Oregon was in a period of moderate drought, nothing like the 40s, but it was a drought. And that drought extended up until the end of 1994. But you'll note from this graph that the average rate of flow in the Rogue River throughout this period of drought was substantially higher than at any period all the way back to 1940. So the reason for that is that Lost Creek Reservoir, and under the management of the Corps of Engineers, stores the natural runoff and then disperses it at a later date when it's needed in the river and when it's needed for other uses. What this bill would do, what 3062 would do, would be to define stored water as stored natural flow. Now, this is very logical. As it turns out, if there were no Lost Creek Reservoir, all of the water that melts from snow in the spring, as it's beginning to do now, would flow down the river, out into the ocean, and it would be natural flow. But that natural flow occurs at a time in the year, namely in the early spring, when there's very little demand for irrigation diversion. So what we're asking under this bill is to just simply recognize through a redefinition of terms that water that is stored during a period of runoff at facilities that are operated by the Corps or by others represents a usable amount of water that should be made part of the available water that is then appropriated by the Oregon Water Resources Department. On page 3 of this report, you'll see a similar graph. This particular graph represents a period of 1961 through 1995. This shows the average rate of flow in August down at Agnes, which is in the canyon. The concerns that all of us have about meeting our scenic flow minimums, and I'm certainly no exception, we want to protect the river, we want adequate flows, we want to protect our fish, and it's important we provide sufficient flows for recreational uses. But the point is very clear. This is August. This is the driest month of the year. And you can see that the net effect of the storage of water by the Corps of Engineers at the Applegate Project and at the Lost Creek Project has resulted in increased rates of flow in the canyon during the hottest months of the year, at the very time when the scenic flow minimums would be at greatest risk. There are similar graphs to show every month of the year, and the dry months of the summer all look just like this. Were it not for stored flow, we would have serious scenic flow minimum problems. But I think that we need to bring reality to the manner in which the state of Oregon measures the rate of flow in our river and perhaps in other rivers around the state. It's not good enough to tell us, to tell the public, or to disguise in its discussion with others that there is only 10% of the amount of water that is actually flowing in the river. We need, and I think the best way to address this problem is to just simply provide a definitional change that guarantees all of us that when we make as a people, when we make a tremendous investment in infrastructure, we turn it over to the management of intelligent beings at the Corps of Engineers, and we store this water and make it available for our rivers at a later date, that we recognize that that water actually exists when it exists in the rivers. So that is the purpose of this bill today. Again, it's sort of a blended testimony coming from the experience of the Savage Rapids Dam Task Force. I think I can say on behalf of most of the members of the task force, there were three county commissioners, three mayors, representatives of the environment, of industry, of agriculture, everybody was there. I think there was a general level of confusion about the theory of natural flow and why it should be used at all. Thank you.
Okay. Questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Carl?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Chris Cobble. I'm attorney for the Grants Pass Irrigation District. I just want to make it clear, are we talking about, am I going to be able to testify about other bills or just simply the bill that we're here on right now?
The first three bills on our agenda are sort of interrelated, so we did open a hearing on all the bills on the agenda. I probably should not have opened on the last one, which seems to be somewhat different. I think since we now have a quorum, I'll do the official thing and close the subcommittee. We open the committee on House Water and Environment, and we'll be hearing House Bills, open a hearing on House Bills 3062, 3065, and 3075.
Okay, if we're going to do that, I'd like to give Mr. Becklin the opportunity to give his testimony on 3065 and on these other bills before I do my testimony, if that's okay with the chair.
Fine.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Becklin, if I confused you.
No, I'm sorry. I should have picked up on you.
We saw that the first witnesses were the same for all of the bills, and so we thought that it would be a time-saving thing to you and to us to do it that way. Perhaps if you have a written testimony, you can briefly summarize rather than read it, and that would be helpful.
I will certainly
thank
do that.
You.
Madam Chair, would you prefer that I hand them out one at a time? I will address them one at a time.
Sure. I think I'll go ahead and open the hearing also on 3076. I see that we have the same person testifying on all of these bills today, which our chair and Ms. McNitt have managed to group together for the convenience of people who are coming from a distance. And so I apologize for any confusion. And you're ready now, Mr. Bethlehem, to speak to 3065.
Yes, again, for the record, my name is Dennis Becklin. I am the chairman of the Grants Pass Irrigation District, and my testimony with regard to House Bill 3065, is testimony that is specific to the Grants Pass Irrigation District. Under 3065, the state of Oregon would grant to the Grants Pass Irrigation District a water right which is equivalent or would be equivalent when it became mature of 52.32 cubic feet per second. This water right is absolutely essential to the health of my community. The water right, and there is a history that I won't go completely through, but as part of my written testimony for you today, I have provided for you a brief summary of the history that surrounds the battle the Grants Pass Irrigation District has been engaged in with regard to this water right need. In fact, the Irrigation District, beginning with its diversions at Savage Rapids Dam in 1921, had typically diverted 200 cubic feet a second at Savage Rapids Dam all the way until approximately the mid-1990s. However, what was discovered in the early 1980s is that the total amount of acreage that was being watered by this district was about half of what it had been when the district was founded back in 1921. The result was that the water right that the district had was reduced to what is now about 97 cubic feet a second. Now, we've discussed previously under House Bill 2600 the issue of carrying water. And what we know about the water right that the irrigation district has is that there is no carrying water that is a part of this water right. And so the district sought a number of years ago a supplemental water right in order to assure that the carrying loss was provided and that the district would in fact be able to deliver its water to the community. As it turns out, looking at the results of the David Newton study, which I have referred to in prior testimony, this is a $400,000 study that was commissioned by the irrigation district. What we know from the Newton study is that approximately 51 cubic feet a second actually seeps out of our canals. What we also know is that about 45% of all of the groundwater recharge in our aquifer comes from the irrigation district, and of that, a significant portion comes from seepage out of the canals. Now, you will see back on page 4 of my testimony, perhaps 5 is a better place to go, that what my entire community understands, a region in southern Oregon with a population in all likelihood in excess of 200,000 people, what we understand is that the battle over the water right that my community needs is not about water at all. It's about Savage Rapids Dam. In fact, what we have is a situation where those who have contested this supplemental water right, the carrying water, are in effect holding my entire community hostage. They think they're only holding the irrigation district hostage. But we know, as a result of two other examples in our region where aquifers have become dewatered, that if the irrigation district does not have the carrying water, if we do not provide recharge in our local aquifers, we're going to have a regional ecological catastrophe in my entire area. And so the challenge that we bring to the legislature is to recognize on behalf of the people of my area, and it's a large population, that we have a responsibility in the process of pursuing some long-term final conclusion to issues at Savage Rapids Dam. I think we, the people, and hopefully the legislature recognizes that it has a very substantial responsibility to maintain the health of our communities. This water right, either provided under House Bill 3065, or in some other, or by some other means, is absolutely crucial to the health and the well-being of a very large region in Southern Oregon. We're not asking to divert more water. In fact, I hope that you challenge the assertion that that's what we're doing. It has been asserted on a number of fronts by opponents of the irrigation district that somehow this supplemental water right is more water. It's not more water. The irrigation district, using its supplemental water right last year, in the 1998 irrigation season, only diverted an average of 143 cubic feet per second at Savage Rapids Dam. Add it up, 97 plus 52. We had more water we could have used, but we have employed a very expensive implementation of a water conservation plan to guarantee that we're not wasting water. So unlike the irrigation district as it was founded in 1921 and all the way up through about 1990, when it was diverting 200 cubic feet a second, the irrigation district, as a result of our efforts and the demands of others, have reduced the actual amount of water down to 143. But we could have an ecological catastrophe on our hands if we divert it, if we reduce it all the way down to 97. Now, I want to reinforce to you that I believe, and I believe that most of the people in our community believe, that the issue about this water right really is about the dam. In fact, it's very disturbing to me, among other things you will see on page 6 of my testimony, quotations that come directly from a grant application request made by Water Watch of Oregon in 1992. A grant application request to the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, which is a federally funded organization. The whole idea behind this grant application was to help the irrigation district. They were going to help us to convert from an old system of diversion to a new system of diversion. And in fact, as you read through the grant application and the grant itself, what you discover is that, in fact, it was focused on getting rid of Savage Rapids Dam. I mean, there were commitments made that funding that was going to be brought to the overall project that Water Watch had proposed was, among other things, intended to provide from the state of Oregon $50,000 to be applied to a study of fish losses at Savage Rapids Dam. I mean, it's quite notable, I think, that since I've been involved in this project now for the last 3 years of my life, I haven't seen the study. In fact, what we know as a result of the study that the irrigation district did last year is that our losses of fish at this facility are virtually zero. But again, I want to just simply bring back to you on balance that what we're dealing with here is a threat to an entire community that is specifically focused on the efforts by the environmental community to get rid of Savage Rapids Dam one way or another. Without the supplemental water for my irrigation district, you're going to have an army of people in Southern Oregon who are going to be without water and who are going to be protesting here in the legislature.
How many, Mr. Becklin?
We know.
How many households are served by your irrigation district?
Currently, there are about 8,000 properties that are served by the district. But what we're really concerned about here is the water that serves those who are not patrons. What we know from the Newton study is that approximately 3,000 wells in our region are, in fact, dependent on recharge that comes from the Grants Pass Irrigation District, either from lands that are irrigated or from seepage that comes from our canals. Were we to have a problem of that scope, and again, I want to remind you that a couple of examples I've previously presented, the dewatering of the aquifer in the town of Central Point, when the contractor a year and a half ago built a drain pipe to take water out of an orchard that is now in the process of being developed into a land subdivision or in a housing subdivision. That pipeline, which now puts needed water into Bear Creek, which really needs the water, has nonetheless dewatered an aquifer that served all of the homes that were in that region. They now collectively are suing because they're still living on trucked-in water. Now, I don't believe that since we have examples, one to the west of us in Kirby, similar dewatering of an aquifer, we cannot just simply ignore. I don't think we can play experiments with a community the size of Grants Pass. I don't think we can just simply satisfy those who have, you know, political commitments or emotional commitments to getting rid of a dam. I don't think we can satisfy them by putting my entire community at risk. And I want to burden the legislature with that problem. I want you individually to understand that I'm here on behalf of a larger community, and I am concerned that the decisions that are made here and that are ultimately made in the state legislature and that will ultimately be made by Governor Kitzhaber could put an entire community at risk. So with regard to 3065, and I thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Madam Chair, Mr. Beckman, in the language of the bill, it appears to me that the bill asks to be granted a water right for 71.79 cubic feet per second, and then later on it asks on October 15, 1999, that it be reduced to 52.32 cubic second. Am I getting this correct?
That is correct.
What's the reason for the reduction?
The reason is that the current supplemental water permit that the district has that dates back to 1994 started out at the higher amount, 71.79, with the full recognition that in 1994 the district had not really undertaken to implement the water conservation plan for which it had paid $400,000. The district was still diverting very nearly 200 cubic feet a second back in 1994. But there was a plan afoot, and it was a sound plan. The Water Resources Commission demanded that each year the district come to the commission, present our report, and demonstrate what the district had done to conserve water. Each of the years, 95 to the present, the district has submitted that report. And notably, the Water Resources Commission has accepted the water conservation report. They have actually agreed that the district is in total compliance and is meeting its due diligence requirements for conservation. So what has happened, and I think it was an intelligent approach taken in 1994 when I had no contact with this irrigation district at all. I jumped in as the white knight a year and a half ago. But in reviewing the actions of the commission, when they granted that supplemental water right, they were also demanding water conservation, and they got it. And so the district has less of a need for water. And by the end of the five-year period of that supplemental water permit, which is this year, no longer needed the full 71. So the district is coming, in effect, mimicking the language of that water permit, recognizing that the mature amount of water that we need will actually be 52.32 second feet of water.
Continue, Mr.
Madam Chair, I'd like to hand out the written testimony I have on 3075. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dennis Becklin. I am testifying on behalf of House Bill 3075. In this particular piece of legislation, you will see that the testimony that I've handed out to you is actually a two-part piece of testimony. About five pages through, you will see the final report and recommendations of the Savage Rapid Sand Task Force, of which I was the chairman throughout 1996. But I'd like to begin with an overview of House Bill 3075. The controversy surrounding Savage Rapids Dam, as you know, goes back a number of years. In a prior legislative session, in the mid-1990s, the legislature passed a piece of legislation that was intended to provide the water right the district needed, this supplement that we had talked about, and secondly, to retain Savage Rapids Dam. Those two things were tied together. That is a piece of legislation that was vetoed by Governor Kitzhaber and subsequently resulted in legislation known as Senate Bill 1006. 1006 established the Savage Rapids Dam Task Force. I previously mentioned that in a process of negotiation between the governor and the legislative leadership, members from throughout our region were selected and were appointed by the governor to the task force. The membership of the task force was very broadly based. I'm very proud of this group of people and the work that they did. You don't know me as a taskmaster or as a boss, but they do. And I worked them hard. We had three mayors, including the mayor of Grants Pass, the mayor of the town of Rogue River, and the mayor of Gold Beach. We have three county commissioners representing each of the three counties through which the Rogue River flows. One from Jackson County, one from Josephine County, and also one from Curry County. Members of the environmental community were there, representatives of the Cattlemen's Association, of industry. I happen to be the industry guy. Members of the task force themselves elected me as the chairperson, and I served in that capacity throughout 1996. Following the completion of our deliberations, which I have previously testified about regarding sediment issues, you'll recall that that came up on a prior occasion and came up yesterday in the Senate on Senate Bill 987. The task force became increasingly concerned about the potential for doing great harm to the river by disgorging what was then thought to be about 520,000 cubic yards of sediment into the Rogue River. As a result, I think primarily of the concerns that were raised in this task force, minds were changed. There were people who came in feeling that Savage Rapids Dam had to go regardless, whose minds were changed as a result of concerns over damage to the river. In Senate Bill 3075, we are asking you to do two things. First of all, I'm asking on behalf of the task force. You have the recommendations, and you will see here in the final sheet or next to the last sheet, the names and the representations of all of the people who served on the task force. There were two who abstained from signing the final report because, frankly, they didn't think anything needed to be done to Savage Rapids Dam at all. There were three who agreed with all of the findings of the Savage Rapids Dam task force, except that they opted to sign under a paragraph that I would like to read for you. The paragraph reads, "The following members of the Savage Rapids Dam Task Force do approve this final report in every respect, except that these members cannot agree to a dam retention alternative in preference to the dam removal option in the Savage Rapids Dam finding report and final environmental statement." They included the then president of Water Watch of Oregon, Mr. Robert Hunter, the representative of the Road Fly Fishers, Mr. Bernie Moore, and the local retired superintendent of schools, Dale Smith. This is the first opportunity that this very hard-working group of people has had to have the results of its work brought back to the legislature. With the big scurry over education and other bills that occurred in 1997, the matter of accepting the task force recommendations never actually was brought to the legislature. I think I've mentioned to you that I'm a complete novice at legislative affairs. This is probably my fault. But we thought that some form of legislation or some consideration here in Salem would be brought as soon as I handed the task force recommendations to the governor. In fact, nothing of the sort occurred during the 97-98 legislative session. Well, I'm here today to do what I told the members of the task force that I was going to do. What I said going in is that we're not doing this to write a white paper. When it's all done, I'm going to hold the feet of our legislature and our elected officials in this state, I'm going to hold their feet to the fire on behalf of the task force. We worked hard. These were very substantial debates that were undertaken in our community. And the outcome of our work deserves to be heard here at the legislature. So I'm here to represent them. The second thing that I'm here to do with regard to House Bill 3075 is to ensure that you understand that the recommendations of the task force included retaining Savage Rapids Dam and upgrading its existing fish passage facilities in order to assure that there would be virtually zero impact on the important salmon and steelhead runs we have in the river. Remember now, I hope you'll remember, that you're speaking to a person who is every bit as much a conservationist as others who may testify today. I am here on behalf of the fish. Note that my foundation advocates for sport fishing and for sport fish, salmon and steelhead. I'm here to protect the fish. Savage Rapids Dam, if the task force recommendations are implemented, will in fact prevent destruction of downstream habitat by preventing the disgorging of sediments, and would in fact be substantially upgraded at roughly the same cost of removing the dam, so that there would be virtually no loss to fish, even though we know at this point from our biological assessments that the loss to fish is so small as to be virtually unmeasurable. It's very important to see if we can get our hands around the facts. It is so discouraging. In some ways, I come to you today with a heavy heart. I'm glad we're able to debate issues like this in this kind of a forum rather than, seeing the settlement of our debates, the manner in which it's going on in the Balkans today. We have an orderly process, but the orderly process ought to depend on factual evidence. It is very disturbing to me that in the grant application request that Water Watch made in 1992, and I could quote directly from it if you wish, the grant application request that was made to the United States Fish and Wildlife Foundation said that Savage Rapids Dam, like many other older dams, has no fish passage facilities whatsoever, either for upstream or downstream migrating fish. That's a fraudulent statement. If 3075 is adopted by the legislature, if the recommendations of the task force are in fact implemented, Savage Rapids Dam in the future will have a zero impact, or very nearly zero impact on the fish compared to its nearly unmeasurable impact today. So I thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today. Obviously, if 3075 is implemented, it ties to it the granting of the water right that is essential to maintain the quality of life in the ecosystem in my community.
Thank you, Mr. Beck. One other question?
Thank you.
Madam Chair, would you prefer that I waited to testify on the last bill following the testimony of others who may wish to...
Why don't you take a break?
I'd like that, and I'd like a drink of water.
We will go ahead and have Mr.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Christopher Cobble. I'm an attorney in private practice in Grants Pass, Oregon, with the firm Schultz, Salisbury, Cobble & Dole. And I am currently act as a local general counsel for the Grants Pass Irrigation District. I'm here at the request of the board of GPID, and I'm here specifically to support and speak on the legislation, House Bill 3065 and 3075, which pertain to the permit. I've been legal counsel for GPID almost 2 years. But this controversy has been going on so long. In fact, now that I think about it, the famous supplemental water rights permit, the permit in 1989, was issued when I was a senior in high school in Grants Pass. So this thing has been going on for quite a long time. Or at least in my context, for quite a long time. The supplemental permit specifically required the Grants Pass Irrigation District to improve fish passage at Savage Rapids Dam. Since things have gone along, this has evolved into a requirement from the commission and from the department that Savage Rapids Dam be removed in order for the permit to stay in place. And that essentially happened when the permit was extended in 1994. And in the extension order, the requirement was placed in the extension order that in order for the order to stay in effect and not be canceled, the Grants Pass Irrigation District had to be duly diligent in removing Savage Rapids Dam. And, of course, there's a lot of legal questions as to what duly diligent means. There are also legal questions as to the conditionality of that in the supplemental permit. But what that did do was it caused, I think, probably enough people to be concerned about that they did go to the legislature, and they did propose the legislation that Mr. Beckman specifically talked about. That was legislation that was very similar to this. There was legislation that would have first required approval by the legislature before dams were to be removed, and also legislation that would have protected the Grants Pass Irrigation District by separating this issue over the permit from the ultimate issue of what happens to Savage Rapids Dam. I think that was good legislation. It was probably a good idea, but it got involved in the political process and eventually led to a compromise, which led to the Savage Rapids Dam Task Force, which after its recommendation actually recommended that the dam be retained. Obviously, why are we here? This Oregon Task Force, this task force that was created by the state of Oregon, recommended that the dam be retained. Yet we still have an environment where our permit has been canceled because of failure to act duly diligent to take out Savage Rapids Dam. So obviously, the Savage Rapids Dam Task Force, while it was a great idea, didn't really do much for the Grants Pass Irrigation District, because we're still looking at cancellation of the permit for failure to take out Savage Rapids Dam. I also want to provide a little bit of context as to how the district really felt that this was essentially a conditional requirement by the, eventually supposed to be a conditional requirement. Obviously, even the commission, the Water Resources Commission, the department would agree that the Grants Pass Irrigation District doesn't have the funds or the ability to remove Savage Rapids Dam. The only entities that can do that are the state of Oregon, or the federal government. Those are the only entities that really have the ability to come forward with the funding to implement removal of Savage Rapids Dam. That was one of the conditions that Grants Pass Irrigation District initially required. And in fact, when the Grants Pass Irrigation District did initially decide that, well, there are some certain conditions in which we would agree to remove Savage Rapids Dam, those conditions are that there would be adequate funding, that there would be subsidies for the incredible amount of electrical expense that the alternative system would require, the pumping system. There would be requirements that the upland area of the dam be remediated. There were a lot of conditions, and in fact, Mr. Becklin's materials on 3065 and 3075 include those specific conditions. And the irrigation district thought that those were the same conditions that the Water Resources Commission was considering when it did put in its order that the district act duly diligent in removing Savage Rapids Dam. I would like to talk a little bit about some of the testimony that happened in that hearing, because I think it's very telling as to what was going on and what the climate was there. And this is from Martha Pagel, the current director, who was the director at the time and the current director of the Water Resources Department. She says, "To summarize and recap, I want to emphasize that our department strongly opposes these measures, that our department never ordered the removal of Savage Rapids Dam. What we ordered was that the district comply with the conservation plan, or that it implement the conservation plan that it proposed and the plan proposed removal of the dam. The board that we dealt with chose that option because it was their least cost alternative." Well, ever since then, we've discovered that that is not going to be the least cost alternative. It's going to be a terrible cost to the Grants Pass Irrigation District. Even if the funds were available to remove Savage Rapids Dam and develop an alternate system, the operation and maintenance requirements and also the electrical costs are going to be staggering. The estimates from the Bureau of Reclamation range from $250,000 to $280,000 a year in electrical costs. That's opposed to the budget of the Grants Pass Irrigation District, which is currently around $1 million. So a quarter of our entire budget would be directly to electrical costs that would be incurred in doing that. Also, the operation and maintenance costs. We're talking about changing a whole system from a gravity system to an electrical system. So those are the things that were considered. Also, there has been no legislation or no efforts to fund removal of Savage Rapids Dam. And in fact, I would ask any of you, if any of you have been asked by anybody to support funding removal of Savage Rapids Dam, and whether you'd even really support that given the current budget crisis that the legislature is currently in and the current demands on the legislature. So at that time, the district was inferring that it would be conditional. And also, we felt that the commission would be flexible based on the comments of Martha Pagel that says, "The order includes language that allows them to come in and propose modification of that plan if it turns out not to work for them. For example, if they cannot get funding to remove the dam or if other things change, then we will renegotiate with them. The bottom line from the department's point of view is that we must address fish passage and we must address efficiency." Well, that's another issue. Where's the political support for this dam removal? Where is the political support in the community? There has absolutely been no political support. In fact, The people in Grants Pass and in the community have been absolutely opposed to removal of Savage Rapids Dam and removal of the dams. And how are you going to be able to build a consensus and be able to build the consensus necessary to get funding to remove that when you don't even have, when there isn't even the political support in the community to support this? So that puts the Grants Pass Irrigation District in a terrible situation. We have an order from the commission that requires us to remove Savage Rapids Dam with absolutely no provisions to actually carry that into effect. And none of the conditions that the district initially required in 1995 have been met or even close to that. Yet the district is currently looking at, and in fact the commission has canceled the irrigation district's permit, and that decision is currently in the Court of Appeals, has been appealed to the Court of Appeals. And that is in a legal arena. And fortunately, Oregon law provides that when an order is appealed of that type, a final order of that type is appealed, then it is stayed pending appeal. So as far as this summer, we are going to be able to use the water under that current supplemental permit. But obviously, from a legal perspective, that's what's been going on. The factors is, and I'm sure that a lot of people said, why was the district even dealing with all this? Why is the district dealing with all of these legal challenges? Why don't they just remove Savage Rapids Dam? And I think that the three things have been the economic situation and the political situation, as well as the uncertainties as far as the sediment and the ecological damages, all of those things which could be the responsibility of the Grand Pass Irrigation District, have simply not come to fruition. I would also like to say that I think that the actions by the department and by the commission have simply been deplorable in this case. They're essentially holding a large segment of the Grand Pass community hostage. They really are under this requirement that the dam be removed or else you're going to lose the water. These are 8,000 tax-paying, property tax-paying Oregon citizens that are stuck in this situation. And I don't think it's good politics, and it's certainly not good government for this to be happening. And I think it's a very sad situation. However, I feel that given these certain situations that have happened because of the requirements of the Oregon by the Department of Water, the Water Resource Department and Commission, and the current status of the legislation and what happened with the task force, I believe that House Bill 3065 and 3075 should be recommended to the House with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there questions on this? We appreciate the history you brought to us.
Okay.
And helping us to take this issue on this perspective. Thank you.
Thank you.
Where should we go now? I'll call Henry Roger. Is it Warriors or Rogers? Rogers?
Rogers.
Okay.
My name is Henry Rogers, and I live in Ashland, Oregon. And I'm here to speak as a representative of the rogue fly fishers. They are not 8,000 strong, but fly fishing generally is a worthy activity, let me put it that way. I caught my first steelhead when I was probably 10 or 11 years old in Wind River. And Wind River is up the Columbia Gorge on the other side in Skamania County. Wind River was just listed. The fish in Wind River were just listed as endangered. And as Harpreet Sandhu, who is the county planner for Skamania County, said, planning in Skamania County is now a whole new ballgame because the Endangered Species Act forces that. We shouldn't be naive about dams. Dams kill fish. When I was a kid growing up in Stevenson, I fished below Bonneville Dam as a teenager in the 1940s, and the sockeye salmon in May and June came up the river, and they were small, and they jumped, and they never bit, never caught one, never saw one caught, nor even snagged. They're gone now. They're not there. You won't see them this year because they're extinct. They went all the way to Idaho to spawn. The talk now up the river is get rid of the dams. Breach those four dams in the lower Snake River. Try to reestablish the run. It doesn't look like it's going to happen. It won't happen because it isn't politically popular. we don't want to lose the rogue fish. Dams kill fish, let's face it. There are no salmon, no anadromous fish spawning above Lost Creek Dam. The salmon spawning above Elk Creek Dam only spawn there because they're trucked around it. The smolts get back down through the hole, but the adults won't go up through the hole in the dam down there. Dams kill fish. That's all there is to it. We don't want to lose those fish. They're part of the heritage of Southern Oregon. And when we talk about sportfish heritage, it's stained gray. It goes all the way back. It's an important thing. One of the great fly fishing rivers in the world, the Rogue River. We hate to lose those. It's bad enough anyway. I could talk about the steelhead that come up into Ashland. There's a little tributary that runs into Bear Creek that runs through Oak Knoll Golf Course that you can step across. But at this time of the year, in the winter, steelhead come up there to spawn. In the summertime, Ashland Bear Creek gets to be 80 degrees because there's not enough flow. And those little smolts run up the tributaries to where it's cooler and spend the summer. I realize that irrigation is necessary and that Grants Pass needs their irrigation water. I don't question that at all. But I do question the dam. I've worked on Savvy Traffic's dam. I worked on the fishways with the help of an orchardist named Meyer. We went down and ran a jackhammer, and it took two of us to do it. Neither one of us were very big. But I've worked on it. I have some appreciation for it. There's the human part of it, too. We have businesses in the valley down there that depend on the river. I have a Willie boat, and Willie Ellingworth has his business there. I buy my tackle from the Masons, a mom-and-pop tackle shop in Medford. We also have an outlet for McKenzie Outfitters. Gloria Harvey, who with her husband started the business in Eugene, used to babysit for my wife's children. There is a human side to the fishing story, too. We think the dam needs to go. It can be replaced with pumps. We think the electricity to run the pumps could be subsidized somehow. But those things have to be investigated. And with that, I'll be quiet.
Thank you, Mr. Weathers. Other questions? We appreciate your testimony. For the benefit of the committee, we have about three more witnesses to call who are opponents of the measures, and then we'll hear again from Mr. Declan on the last measure particularly. John McDiarmid?
Thank you, Chairman Taylor, and other members of the committee as well. My name is John McDiarmid. I live in Central Point, Oregon. I've always been a registered Republican. For many years, I've owned a business, and our industry has been very active in this legislature, specifically supporting the Republican members of the legislature. Many times, I've gathered other members of my industry together for meetings with Republican candidates from our area. No more. That ceased in 1998. And my judgment, our party is not fish friendly. The bills before you today say so. In good conscience, I just cannot do it anymore. I will not be part of a process that is reducing the fish population. The fish are too few. They are too precious. My son, at 11 years old, last October, caught his first steelhead on the fly rod in the Rogue River. We, of course, released it. My decision may cost me income and net worth. I am a landlord. I started with a duplex 25 years ago, and now I own a 100-space mobile home park. Only you, the legislature, specifically the Republican legislature, stand between me and financial disaster rent control. But I am prepared for the consequences of my actions. It is more important for me to leave to my children and hopefully grandchildren a stream with wild fish instead of an income stream. They will be well educated. They can make their own income. I'm going to leave you with two more thoughts. Do you doubt the Savage Rapids Dam kills fish? The largest dam building entity in the history of the United States, the Bureau of Reclamation, says so with an environmental analysis of the facility. It is a fish killer. My second thought is an obvious one, but sometimes the obvious one is lost. No one wants to harm the irrigation district. I'm an irrigator. I farm. I want them to have their water. We just don't want them to, we just want them to eliminate the fish mortality that goes along with their diversion. The bills before you are some of the most unthought out bills I have ever seen in my life. I used to work in water resources before I was a landlord. House Bill 3062 on natural flow. Do you realize the Bureau, the Corps of Engineers has a water right for that water stored behind that reservoir, and it was given to them by the state? And that the operation of that reservoir is set by Congress in the authorizing legislation of that project. You can't change how they're going to run that project with just the state legislation. You've already given them a water right. If they can't get a water right to it, they're not going to store it. And that water, and that their operating criteria that's set by Congress has water allocated to M&I use, future M&I use, and agricultural use when it becomes necessary. Or when it can become used. The Sam's Valley Irrigation District, this band, there was one of the few large places along the Rogue River that could actually use the water. They couldn't pay for their distribution system, much less any water out of the reservoir. But if that changes, they can pick that water up, and that's allocated to that use by Congress. You can take an act of Congress to change how they're going to operate that reservoir. That surplus water right now, because nobody's come in to divert that water yet. I don't know, it seems like you got a problem, let's go to the legislature. Maybe they can fix it for us. I'm sorry if I'm too emotional, but I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Yes, sure.
Yes. Representative Jim Allen.
Chairman and Mr. McDermott, how many years did you farm?
I've been farming for 10 years.
And how many acres?
12.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
How many years did you work for Water Resources?
I didn't work for Water Resources, ma'am. I worked in the water industry as a consultant for a consulting firm. 10 years.
Thank you.
Sure.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bob Hunter?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Reed Benson, the Executive Director of Water Watch. With me is Bob Hunter, one of the founding board members of Water Watch. And he one time was president of Water Watch, and now he is our staff attorney in Medford. He has worked for many years on the issues surrounding water use in Grants Pass and the fate of Savage Rapids Dam, and he is going to primarily deliver our testimony today.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, as we indicated, my name is Bob Hunter.
live in Medford, Oregon. I've lived there about 20 years, a little over 20 years. For 20 years, I practiced law in a general business practice, and I've always been found the Rogue River and its fishery and our other water and fishery resources to be a very important thing and part of our heritage as citizens of the state of Oregon. I'm going to give some testimony first on behalf of Water Watch in respect to House Bill 3062, which is the bill that we oppose. It's really not very well conceived. It's unworkable, really, I believe, the way it's drafted. And it fails to account for innumerable variations of dam ownership, dam operations, authorized purposes of dams, allocation of stored water behind dams, and the annual variations in the total amount of water in individual reservoirs on specific dates. The bill appears to be an attempt to reallocate stored water behind dams for future appropriation by redefining the stored water as natural flow water. Reallocating this water by redefining it could very easily adversely affect existing stored water right holders and cause conflicts between users of stored water and new appropriators who could essentially be granted a right to use the same stored water. That, no matter how you define it, basically the water stored behind reservoirs is used by the owner-operator, whether it's the federal government or a private entity. And this bill applies to all reservoirs. Some reservoirs may have surplus stored water, others may not. The way stored water is measured here by looking at how much water is there on November 1st compared to May 1st or when it is full does not give any indication of how much surplus water there would be in the reservoir because it has nothing to do with how much is actually allocated and being used. Plus, even if there's unallocated water behind a reservoir, this bill doesn't address the fact that, such as with Lost Creek and Applegate dams, which have been discussed here, that water is still legally allocated by authorizing federal legislation as to uses and may be allocated sometime in the future for those uses. So it's really not available for appropriation as natural flow water. And in fact, if it is appropriated by somebody because of the enactment of this bill, they're essentially getting stored water without paying for it. And it is true, we have spent a lot of money on this infrastructure, but part of the deal is that those who use the water for certain purposes will also pay for it to help reimburse the federal government and the taxpayer for the benefits of that. And I worry about this bill as a means of sort of allocating stored water to users in such a manner that they would not have to pay for it. And in fact, I have a concern that may be part of the motivation for pushing this. One of the things to talk about is that GPID might go and purchase some stored water behind Lost Creek Reservoir, but it's very expensive. A bill such as this might allow it to actually make use of that stored water without paying for it. I think the point is this bill provides no logical basis for determining water availability for future appropriation. You could have a situation where in 1 year, based on this definition, depending on the flows on November 1st and May 1st, there wouldn't be water available for appropriation, so someone wouldn't be granted right. But at a later year, there could be, and somebody would be granted the right. It really doesn't allow the state to manage the water resource in an appropriate manner. And I think those are some of the main points that I wanted to make in respect to that bill. It's just really not well thought out, and it's not workable, and the differences in terms of how dams are operated, their ownership, and all those types of things, you just can't have a bill like this that applies across the board. I think Reed wanted to make a couple of
maybe real-world examples that pertain to the Willamette Basin and the water stored in the Willamette Basin. Essentially, this bill identifies the water that is at one point stored in these reservoirs and sort of assumes for purposes of water rights that it has nothing better to do. And that isn't necessarily the case. For example, water from the Willamette Basin reservoirs operated by the Corps of Engineers has for a long time been released to meet minimum flows at Albany and Salem that were established for navigation, but now are primarily maintained for water quality. And in fact, the pollution discharge permits up and down the Willamette are tied to those minimum flows in the Willamette that are provided by the water stored in those reservoirs. And if that water were now considered to be available for appropriation, for irrigation or domestic use as provided in this bill, there could be some real water quality impact associated with that. And I don't think we need to do anything now that is going to be further undermining water quality in the Willamette River. A second point is that the Corps of Engineers for years has operated several of those reservoirs in the Willamette for summer recreation. The water is primarily stored in those reservoirs and held there. Those reservoirs, especially Fern Ridge, Foster, and Detroit, are held as high as they can, as long as they can, to provide recreational benefits that are real important to some of those communities up there, and they feel very strongly about that. This bill assumes, and that water doesn't really leave those reservoirs then until after Labor Day. This bill would assume that water's there for irrigation in the summertime, even though really it isn't. So I think there are some real significant problems with this bill, and we would urge you to reject it. Thank you.
Actually, one additional comment there, too. In terms of Lost Creek and Applegate Dam, part of the justification for constructing the dams were the public benefits that would be achieved from storing water and releasing it for in-stream flow. And, in fact, that's one of the authorizing purposes of those projects. So a portion of the water that is released from the dam in stream is actually released and protected in stream and is really not available for appropriation. And again, this bill does not distinguish as to whether those releases are excess water or water dedicated in stream flow or other purposes. I'm going to give testimony now in respect to House Bill 3065. And 3075, and most of my comments apply to both bills, and I have some additional comments in respect to 3075. And in respect to these two bills, I'm testifying not just on behalf of Waterwatch, but also on behalf of Trout Unlimited, which has about over 1,600 members statewide. First, I guess before getting into maybe some of the sort of specifics about the bill and how it applies to Water Resource Commission orders and grants passed in the dam, I think it's important to step back for a second and look at what's being asked. I think these bills promote bad state policy instead of bad precedent. I think the legislature should ask itself the question, does it really want to get into the business of granting individual water rights to applicants? I think these... Once you start doing that, what's to prevent other people who keep coming, they get denied a permit or something, they come to the legislature for that grant. And I don't think it's really a good place for the legislature to act. Those powers have been delegated to agencies. There's been processes established by statute. And I think all in all, that process is set up to for purposes, and some of those processes are there to protect the public interest when water rights are issued. And these bills would circumvent the Water Resources Authority to issue water rights, would undermine the authority of the Water Resources Commission, and undermine those statutory processes. And there's other specific things that also get raised, too, when you sort of statutorily try to create a water right. It raises some questions in terms of things that you see missing that you typically see in typical water rights. In other words, these bills don't state what the beneficial use of the water is to be applied for, or whether or not water is from natural flows or stored flows, whether or not it's subject to conservation standards, subject to abandonment. Is this right being granted legislatively a permitted right or a certificated right? A large number of issues that are not dealt with in this, and that's why we have state agencies to deal with these types of applications. Now I'd like to get into a little bit more about the process in respect to GPID's water right and the commission actions. And another reason I think these bills should be opposed, and that is because I think they discourage cooperative processes. The process involving GPID's water right and the dam has really been an ongoing one that did start up in the early 80s when they had to go through their final proof survey, just like any other water right holder does. You get a water right to a base in a quantity based on the amount of acreage you're going to irrigate. And then at some point you have to prove up and show that you've applied that water to beneficial use without waste for actually using that water to irrigate the acres you said. Now, when GPID got around to its final proof survey, as has been indicated before, they were only irrigating about half the acres they had originally applied for, and therefore they got received a certificated right for about half, or 97 cubic feet per second. They realized they operationally would have a difficult time operating at that lower rate. So they came back to the Water Resources Department and Commission and asked for more water. It would be an unusual thing to give somebody a water right to apply additional water to the same acreage once they've already been great and duty has been set and have been given a certified right. And it was especially troublesome in the situation grants passed because their system is very inefficient. Now, it's indicated that their right didn't include any carrying water. That's not correct. All water rights, rates, and duties have carrying water applied to it. It just so happened here that GPID's system is so wasteful and inefficient that even with that carrying water, it has a difficult time operating. The $400,000 Dave Newton study showed that only 18% of the water that was being diverted by the district actually was utilized by crops. Terribly inefficient system, and I don't really think I think these bills would encourage basically that kind of wasteful use. But faced with this problem, and faced with the fact that Savage Rapids Dam also had inadequate ladders and screens, and was known as one of the chief fish killers on the Rogue River, they had some issues they needed to address there. So what occurred, there was a negotiated process that started, and the pro fishery groups negotiated with the irrigation district in the state, and what was decided was to issue a temporary permit to give them their additional water in 1990 based on them doing the study that became the Dave Newton report. And everyone sat down, and the purpose of the study was to go through and see what can we do to conserve water and address these fish problems. The result of the study was a recommendation that came back to the commission and that was basically put forth by the irrigation district that the best thing for the irrigation district was to implement this conservation plan that has reduced its diversion needs and to remove the dam to solve its fish passage problem as being the most cost-effective method of dealing with those issues. So that's what was brought to the commission in 1994, and basically the pro-fishery groups supported the district in getting their water based on the fact, based on their commitment to remove the dam to solve the fish passage benefits. And that's kind of how that process evolved. And I think to now undermine that process where these orders were really based on commitments, the district has received the benefit from the rights that were granted in 1990-94, but did not fulfill its responsibilities. And I think we have to ask the question is, one, I don't think it's good policy to get into issuing water rights, and two, why do we want to get into it in a situation where we have a wasteful use and where we would be rewarding what I believe is an irresponsible and litigious irrigation district? One really needs to kind of look at what's happened in the process. After the order was entered in 1994, the district accepted it and had some duties and responsibilities under it, which was to move forward with due diligence to get the funding to remove the dam. They failed to meet their responsibilities, and in respect to that, there was ultimately a contested case hearing in 1998, and the hearings officer there basically had some findings that indicated that throughout the entire period, the district's primary approach to dam removal was one of opposition, not diligence. Pardon?
Yeah, I'm not finding a good time to break in. Madam Chairman, Mr. Hunter, how can they get the funding in the community if the community is opposed to it? You said they failed to?
Yes, they failed to exercise due diligence. I think there's two things. One, part of their due diligence requirement was to actually go to the community and educate the community and get and seek support. Now, one thing you've indicated here, no one has been before the legislature to ask for help or support in terms of implementing the dam removal pumping plan. Why is that? Why has the district not come back to the legislature and asked for its support instead of coming to the legislature and saying, and run it?
Follow-up, Madam Chair, does that take funding too, what you just suggested?
To come here?
For what you asked for.
I guess what I'm saying is, yes, funding would take support, both at the state and federal level. But the point is, the district did not come to the state or, in good faith, go to the federal government to try to seek that funding or build that support. And, in fact, instead what happened is a lot of misinformation was sent out to the patrons, which steered them away from supporting, many of the patrons from supporting this removal. But a good body of them did. And see, what happened after 1994, there was an election and a new board was elected. And they actually, in 1995, came to the legislature with similar bills to the ones you're seeing today to end run the process back then. And that resulted in the task force bill. So right away, the new board that was elected did not do its job in terms of going to its patrons in the community to try to build the support. Instead, they tried to get around the commitment by getting the legislature to bail it out. And was partially successful with the enactment of Senate Bill 1006 in 1995, which resulted in the task force, which delayed implementation of the plan, and that planning process was gone. What's interesting is that after the task force completed its deliberations and submitted its recommendations, it came back to the irrigation district. They had the opportunity at that time to go back to the commission and modify the order to ask the commission to maybe have the task force recommendations as part of the requirements rather than the task force requirements rather than dam removal. Instead, they went through a facilitated local process with the Rogue Valley Council of Governments and came to the conclusion in 1997 that it was still best for them to remove the dam and replace it with pumps. So they never adopted the task force recommendation. And in 1997, we're ready to represented to the Water Resources Commission and National Marine Fisheries Service that they were willing to move ahead with that plan. But again, then they got they did not survive the election, and now we have the current board with Mark Davis.
Oh, Madam Chair, I'm a little bit confused about who funds, who pays for it.
Oh, the dam
for removing the dam.
The original plan was based on federal financing for dam removal. And that's why the Bureau of Reclamation did an environmental impact statement on it. They were very interested in being the acting agency to do that. We had Senator Hatfield, who was very interested. But the main failure to be able to move ahead with that was the fact that the district itself breached its commitment to support the funding package.
And what was your commitment to be?
Well, their commitment was the one that was made to the state and the groups that supported them in their water rights. It was a condition on their permit that to get to have this additional benefit of the state's water resource, they were supposed to basically move forward with due diligence to try to get it removed. Now, in 1997, the Water Resources Commission was concerned about their lack of progress, and they had asked the
follow-up, Madam Chair. I didn't serve on the Salmon Committee, and so this is all new to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to take up a lot of time of the committee that already knows the answers to these questions, but if you could really simplify who pays for it and those kinds of things for me, and real, you know,
The quick answer is, we don't know who pays for it yet because we haven't found anyone to pay for it. We haven't found anyone to pay for the dam removal plan. There's been no one who's been found to pay for the task force plan yet.
All right.
But the point is, we were supposed to go forward together, and the district was supposed to use due diligence to go forward and try to build the support to get the funding, whether it be at the federal level or the state level.
All right.
And it's too bad we're not here asking for financial support to implement the plan, which would solve all the problems rather than trying to continue to prop up a district that continues to kill fish. And I think it's important to note, too, this district is not an agricultural district. The average size parcel is under 2 acres, and the majority of the parcels are under a half acre in size. The majority of the lands are within the urban growth boundaries of the cities of Grants Pass and Rogue River, and the city of Grants Pass has the capacity to serve their needs. You heard testimony that it would be a disaster if they lose their water. because of that, they went the district went to the county, Josephine County, to ask them to support funding purchasing water from Lost Creek to supply that discrepancy. And I have a letter which I'll submit for the record from the Josephine County Water Resources Department to the Josephine County Commissioner, quote, that studies have shown, this is the GTID water management study that we talked about in the Newton Report, that there is adequate recharge to aquifers to meet demand if GTID were to line or pipe its canals within the urban growth boundaries. This assumes that irrigation district water is not replaced with groundwater use. What they're saying is that though it may be true that the use of that irrigation water is important to the aquifer, if you got rid of that seepage, that is a small portion of what is needed. And the county did not think it was that big of an issue if the district was required to conserve and eliminate that 52 CFS and seepage. And I'll submit this for the record. I'll maybe make a point that every fishery agency that has looked at this dam believes it is a major killer of fish on the road and believes the best solution is to remove it and replace it in pumps, with pumps. This dam is strictly a diversion dam, and its function can be replaced by pumps. And there's really no reason to continue to keep the dam or not require its removal. I should also point out that since the Savage Rapids Dam Support made its recommendation, the coho salmon on the Rogue River system is listed as a threat. And that is another thing. And we have the steelhead that are candidate species and the Chinook salmon that are posed for listing. This matter is just, these issues at the dam are just going to get worse. And no matter what the fix is, there are some benefits you can't achieve as long as the dam's there. It was made really clear to the task force by Frank Young, a 30-year biologist for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, that even with the state-of-the-art technology with ladders and screens to the dam, you're still going to have significant impacts in the dam. And part of the reason is you're going to have predation in the reservoir pool, a high rate of predation in the reservoir pool as fish migrate down. And as long as the dam's there, you have that seasonal reservoir pool. You're still going to have losses due to delays of fish coming up, and you're still going to have mortality. That's significant. Also, with the dam there, we lose 3.5 miles of prime spawning area upstream of the dam that would otherwise be available for fall Chinook salmon, right in the heart of fall Chinook salmon spawning in the Rogue River. It's about the only place you can reclaim that kind of significant habitat on a main stem river such as the Rogue. And these are reasons that neither of these bills really should be supported. Most of the problems that were brought in the district were brought on in by themselves. The sediment issue that has been raised here is an issue that the Bureau had done a preliminary assessment of during the EIS process and felt that it could be managed just by releasing it during high winter flow times as sort of part of the natural sediment load that moves down the system at that time. There were issues raised as to contamination behind the sediment pool. Those have been resolved. Studies actually done by Mr. Becklin. The results of those have been given to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and they show there's no contamination problem in sediments. Those issues are felt, are believed by the agencies that are very manageable. National Marine Fisheries Service, which again your legislation can affect, has indicated that basically it believes that any incidental take permit that would be issued to the district under the Endangered Species Act should be based on a habitat conservation plan that requires dam removal. I think maybe just in closing, I'd like to indicate that I don't think that failure to grant the district this water will be a disaster for the community. And to the extent it does create a problem, it's a problem that was brought in the community by the district's actions itself. All they had to do, and what they basically acknowledged to the Water Resources Commission in 1997 they would do, is prepare a plan, develop a plan on how they were going to go about getting funding for dam removal. But in 1998, when Mr. Becklin and the new board took power, instead of continuing the process of cooperation, which kept us out of the courts and everything else, they elected to pursue a litigation strategy, and instead of developing a plan, which is all they had to do, they elected to challenge that in court and no longer support dam removal in an active fashion, which brought about the contested case hearing and cancellation order. It's also interesting to note that in 1997, before the Water Resources Commission, Mr. Beckland had submitted some testimony where he indicates that GPID should consider voluntary cancellation of water rates which exceed the certified rate of 97 feet per second. He stated GPID can and will survive with a reduction in its water rights. He also goes on to say GPID should install seepage-proof linings in all of the canals owned by the district, and indicates that GPID is not allowed under its water right to provide seepage from its irrigation canals into the water table of Josephine and Jackson counties. GPID has neither the right nor the responsibility to provide free of cost quality of life benefits to the general public there. And I think the point there is I think the new group that's in charge is more concerned about saving a dam that isn't needed than it is about the community or the irrigation district. We had a win-win solution that was worked out in a cooperative process. It's too bad, and it's sad that that's been derailed, but I hope the legislature will not reward folks for breaching commitments and breaking agreements, and instead will let them suffer the consequences that they brought on themselves. And there's still opportunities to maybe work things out. There are settlement negotiations ongoing, but that's all I can say on that.
If I could close with one very brief point about process. In 1997, the then board of directors of the irrigation district, which was themselves elected on Save the Dam platform in 95, took out a full-page advertisement in the Grand Pass newspaper of 9 good reasons why the district voted to remove Savage Rapids Dam. The district board itself said, here's 9 good reasons why we want to take the dam out. Those are still good reasons today. The current board of directors doesn't believe in that. They've embarked on a different course, and the Water Resources Commission has chosen to proceed with cancellation of their water rights, as they warned the district that they would do. And now the district is having to face that. They have had an opportunity for a full administrative hearing, at which they lost. They are now in the Court of Appeals. That matter is pending. The Water Resources Commission, I should point out, does not have a history of going after irrigators in an aggressive way. In fact, 3 of the members of the commission are themselves irrigators, one from Bend, one from Hermiston, one from Ontario. This is not a group that has any kind of an agenda, any kind of a vendetta. There's been a fair process, and this is Grants Pass Irrigation District attempt to get through the legislature, what they have not been able to get through the commission, what they're still trying to get through the courts. For that reason, Governor Kitzhaber vetoed legislation very similar to 3065 in 1995, and we think he had very good reasons for doing so. With that, we'll close. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Would you come up and address those 3 bills in a group? 3062, 6.5 and
7.5. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Marcia Tagle, Director of the Water Resources Department. We do have written testimony on each of these bills, which will be passed out to you shortly. To the course of the testimony that's been given so far today, I've been taking notes like crazy on different points that I thought I ought to respond to. But as the hour is late, and even more significantly, as I kind of get a second thought myself, I think one thing I've learned over time is that it's not always all that productive to take on issues point by point. What I do want to say, though, is I think that the testimony so far has pretty clearly laid out for you that in any matter as complicated as this one, there are at least 2 sides to it. And in this one, I think there are a lot more than 2 sides, as is very often the case in a public policy matter. And that the job of the Water Resources Department and the Commission over time has been to try to sort through those different perspectives and concerns and to try to arrive at what we thought was the most sensible and fair-minded and reasonable solution. That's what we thought we negotiated with the district board in 1994, it framed the permit that it was currently under cancellation proceeding. We did that in good faith with the district board, and the district board, I believe, acted in good faith at the time. And so much has transpired since then, and so much has changed this and complicated this. I won't go into a blow-by-blow response, but I do want to at least respond to what I think are very inaccurate and inappropriate characterizations of coercion, deplorable tactics, holding people hostage. I think that is not a fair representation of what's happened here, and that we have tried very hard to seek a reasonable outcome, and I hope that in reviewing the materials, we'll get a sense of that. We do oppose all three of the measures that are in front of you. I'll start with House Bill 3062 that would create a new definition of the term stored natural flow. This would modify the way in which we calculate water availability for future appropriations. The way this bill is confusing as it's printed, it's been sort of a situation that we face with several other bills where it's hard to figure out just what is intended, and the words themselves are confusing. But as it's laid out for you, it would risk serious injury to other water users. Under current law, we have a clear distinction between natural flow rights and stored water rights. And this concept would tangle those all up and could seriously jeopardize the rights of those people who have stored water and their prerogative now to enter into contracts for the use of that stored water. And when the stored water is released from the reservoirs, it is generally released for a purpose. And when it's released for a contracted purpose and a specified purpose, it's our job to protect that water for that purpose. If it's just released, as is sometimes the case in a flood control situation, without a specified contract, we do treat it as natural flow in the sense that if somebody else is on that water right or on that waterway and they have a natural flow right, their turn in terms of their priority date, we do give that water to them. So we have tried to balance real-time needs with long-term decision-making. Our water availability plan is one that is based on having a predictable, reliable source and some estimate of when the water is going to be available year after year after year. That's the water availability model that we talk about, and it's not something that we just cooked up in an arbitrary fashion. It is described in this document, and it has had significant independent peer review. Our hydrologists and technical experts have worked on this, and it is intended to give us a model of a reliable model of what water is available, and we use that for permitting decisions. But when the actual flow is there, on a distribution basis, we count it for that purpose. That's the main point that I wanted to make with House Bill 3062. We think it is ill-conceived. It would be real damage to the current system of water rights and appropriation, and it could risk injury to existing water right holders. As to 3075 and 3065, in our written testimony, we tried to provide a background, albeit our perspective, of how this matter has unfolded over the years. The bottom line here is that we think it is poor legislative policy to enter into an additional water right. And as you've heard from other witnesses before you, that this sends entirely the wrong message and would create a real concern that folks are going to come to the legislature to get their water rights instead of going through a process which you prescribe and which we follow. The issues that we dealt with in the grant pass case are ones that come to us because we are following the law that's laid out that requires us to look at water availability. And it requires us to protect scenic waterway flows. It requires us to consider the public interest, including fish. So those are the issues that give rise to this in the first place. We've been going through a process. It is currently pending before the Court of Appeals, and we think that that's where it belongs. With respect to House Bill 3075, this is the one that would make reference to the Savage Rapids Dam Task Force, and so whereas 3065 would simply grant a water right as specified in the bill, 3075 would grant a water right but would also impose some conditions relating to the Savage Rapid Sand Passport. A couple of points that I wanted to make about that were that that task force work certainly was a compromise after the 95 session, and they worked very hard. That occurred before we had an endangered species listing on the Rogue River. Now we have an endangered species listing, and the task force was not reestablished. It didn't wasn't called back into duty, but the fact that they have not, those task force recommendations don't have any further analysis in light of the listing that we now have. We also have the fact that the National Marine Fisheries has initiated an enforcement action against the dam as a fish killer in light of the listing, and that case is pending. So these are things that we can't ignore, even though the bill would try to strike a compromise by tying a legislatively granted water right to the recommendations of this task force. We still have no funding to implement those recommendations. We have no consideration of ESA issues. And still the bottom line is that the legislature would be granting a water right, and we think that is the wrong policy to entertain. So we strongly oppose the measure.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pega. Further questions? I appreciate your bringing up written testimony, which we can have available to us if we have questions. We have concluded the testimony on House Bill 3062, 3065, and 3075, unless there are other persons who came to speak specifically to those bills. I'll close the hearing on 3062, 3065, 3075, and we'll address 3076 at this time. Mr. Benson and Mr. Cottle, could you come up together and give and summarize your testimony for the benefit of our members who are beyond their usual committee time? Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dennis Becklin. I'm delighted to be able to change my hat today to testify on behalf of 3076. It'll be nice to no longer be a litigious defendant, but instead to represent the interests of sport fish heritage. It's tough when you're constantly defending the legal challenges that are brought to you, which is what I've done over the last year. But with regard to 3076, this is a real departure from my previous testimony today. I was alarmed, frankly, about 3 months ago when I saw a story that was in our local newspaper indicating that there were in excess of 90 different causes for listing segments of rivers within the Rogue Basin as water quality limited. Now, perhaps those of you who are concerned about the conditions of our rivers have been watching these stories develop. Under federal requirements, under EPA 303D, the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality has a responsibility for monitoring and then on a biennial basis determining whether or not sections of rivers in the state of Oregon, sections of water, should be classified as being water quality limited. Now, I'm here today because having investigated all of those 90 sections on the Rogue River, if you're interested in seeing any of this data, it is available on a website within the state of Oregon's website. I pulled all of the data down, and I was very alarmed to discover that within the Rogue Basin itself, and in fact, if you will swing back about 5 pages, you will find a page in my testimony today that looks like this. I was alarmed because what I discovered is that the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality is not appropriately listing sections of our rivers as they are required to do. You will see, and these are just a few examples that I have in my testimony today, the DEQ goes through this process every second year, but quite commonly, they are using data that may have been collected as much as 10 years ago. Now, this is clearly not appropriate. What we know is that the regional weather patterns in which we have here in Oregon, especially along the coastal sections of Oregon, is that we have these decadal oscillations. Mrs. Tagle did not refer to these specifically, but I really need to emphasize the fact that we go through periods of drought and then we go through periods of extreme rain. All of us know that it's been extremely wet the last 3 or 4 years. And what we see in the listing that DEQ makes under EPA 303D is that quite commonly they are continuing to list as water quality limited using data that goes back to the drought. In fact, you'll see many instances where the data that's being used to list these streams this year or last year was actually collected in 1988. Now, there's a world of difference in the conditions of our rivers during a period of drought than during a period of high rain. So the first thing that I wanted to do in my testimony today was to raise an alarm bell for the legislature, because the Department of Environmental Quality may in fact be inadequately funded to do the work that is necessary in order to be able to list these streams properly. Now, for my friends who live in Ashland, they're quite aware of the fact that they are now dealing with an incredibly expensive project of getting rid of their treated sewage by pumping it out and sprinkling it onto land that they are or have acquired to the east of the town of Ashland. There's a reason for this. Unfortunately, somewhere in the neighborhood of half of the originating flow in Bear Creek comes out of the sewer treatment plant in Ashland. And because the treated water tends to be warmer than the stream into which it is being discharged, it is automatically in violation of current EPA standards. Now, the decisions made by DEQ to list or not list are going to be phenomenally expensive for our communities. But we're talking about perhaps hundreds of millions of dollars trying to remediate these issues. I'd like, if you will, to just point to you on page 2 of this handout. There's a graph here. I mentioned earlier that I've got all of the data on the Rogue River. This graph ought to really scare you, because what I have collected here is the average temperature of the Rogue River in Grants Pass at the USGS station. The hottest time of the year in the river is always the month of July. Now, you'll note, you see that there are these vertical bars. That shows you the average temperature in July for that year. Notice the two black lines that run horizontally across that graph. One of those is at 64 degrees. That is the temperature that the United States government is imposing upon all of us and demanding that we bring our water temperatures down to under 64 degrees. It is clear that it may end up being reduced to 62 degrees. Now, if you look at this graph, you will see that the history of water temperatures in the Rogue River demonstrates that until Lost Creek Reservoir was completed in 1977, the temperature was always higher than what the federal government is now demanding that we bring it down to. We are, in effect, being compelled to refrigerate the river. The Department of Environmental Quality, for its part, is not doing an effective job of collecting data so that it can do an effective job of lifting the quality of these various sections of rivers in our state. At the very time that the state of Oregon is under a mandate to do everything that it can to improve the conditions of our rivers so that we can improve habitat for our fish. And so I'm here today on behalf of my foundation called Sportfish Heritage. You know that I'm testifying today as the founder of Sportfish Heritage because I'm a conservationist, because I'm concerned about the river and its fish. But we need to bring sanity to this process. And if it takes more money appropriated to the Department of Environmental Quality so that they can collect data every 2 years and therefore be able to make accurate representations of the quality of our various stream sections every 2 years, then that's what we ought to do. That would be a very wise expenditure because we will probably save hundreds of times that investment in the future investment that we otherwise make in infrastructure because we all are working with inaccurate data on our rivers. I don't know how much money they need. I certainly hope that they will come forward and offer that. But I'm also asking the legislature to mandate the manner in which the data is taken and to impose upon DEQ a requirement that it be peer-reviewed. It ought to be accurate. It ought to pass the kind of scientific demands that peer review would compel it to pass.
What exactly do you mean by peer review here in this context?
Peer review is typically the review by people who are knowledgeable in the subject. And normally peer review would include a review of the scientific methodology. DEQ must have some methodology for taking samples. I know, for example, they took water temperature samples at Gold Ray Dam on occasions in 1990, 91, 92, 93, and 94, in other words, during the drought, and then proceeded to use that water temperature data that they selected on those days, and they claim now that an entire section of the Rogue River is water quality limited because it's too warm. And yet the water temperatures were taken under what I think to be highly questionable scientific basis. So peer review would bring a group of experts to bear on ensuring that the Department of Environmental Quality does collect data in an accurate way, and then that it represents that data accurately when it lifts various sections of our rivers. Because if a river is not in trouble, we ought not be refrigerating it. If a river is naturally warm and always has been naturally warm, we might actually cause substantial adverse impact to the aquatic species in that river by lowering the temperature of that river artificially, regardless of what the federal government says.
Excuse me, Mr. Benson, I hate to cut you off, but I'm afraid I'm going to lose my committee.
Thank you very much.
Overtime here, and so if you could just make a closing statement or two, we'd appreciate it.
I would like to make a closing statement. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We have your written testimony, and we appreciate it. And the only person signed up to speak here are Dick Patterson. And we appreciate your patience in waiting through the afternoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Dick Patterson, and I am the manager of the Standards and Assessment Section for Department of Environmental Quality's Water Quality Division. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify on House Bill 3076. You received written testimony that I provided that explains why DEQ is opposing House Bill 3076. I would like to offer just a very few brief comments in that regard. First, it is important to understand that the state of Oregon is responsible for implementing the Federal Clean Water Act. And in that regard, we are delegated that responsibility from the Environmental Protection Agency. And it has been explained we have certain requirements in that delegation. And one of those, as was stated just a minute ago, is to review data that we have in our database to determine whether or not there's any waters in the state of Oregon that are impaired. And impaired means that they do not meet the state's water quality standards that are there that designated beneficial uses. And when we review that data, we prepare a list, and that list is called the 3L3D list of impaired water bodies. We submit that to EPA for their approval. And upon that approval, then that becomes sort of the focus of water quality management plans that are going on within basins to improve water quality. DEQ opposes House Bill 3076 for two main reasons. One of those is duplication of effort and a change of current practices, which are that we work with local watershed councils and land management agencies, relying on them to collect data and work with them to collect data that we will review for listing purposes. This protocol or this procedure was given to us by the 1997 legislature in that they asked us to rely on those resources rather than DEQ going out and doing all of that monitoring ourselves. With that direction through legislation, we've been working with watershed councils. We have provided watershed councils monitoring equipment and are training about 40 watershed councils who are now in the process of collecting data across the state that they will permit for us to review to determine whether or not a water body is, should be, or it should not be on the state 303D list. As the bill is written, Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, I don't believe there's any TMDLs done in the Rogue Basin. I'm not sure if Sucker and Greyback Creek are in the Rogue Basin. If they have, that one has been submitted to EPA.
Where are you in, where is the Rogue Basin on the schedule for having that done?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, if I could refer to Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, under the Oregon plan, we put out a schedule for completing TMDL on basins across the state, and the Rogue Basin is scheduled to be completed in 2004.
Have you completed?
Madam Chair, I've not. I just have a few more weeks on it. On the first point, in terms of duplication and monitoring, is that the bill, as written, does require DEQ to go out and continue and to assess temperatures within these basins, and that's stuff that's already going on now. So that would be a duplication of us going out and collecting data that is being collected by different entities out there. The second reason, main reason that we oppose House Bill 3076 is one of a legal concern. A ruling in district courts in Idaho requires that states and EPA, when they make determinations on whether or not water bodies are impaired, use all data that is, appropriately, has appropriately controlled quality controls and quality assurance requirements. And so the way the bill is written, it's perceived that we would not be using all data. And that, of course, is the court's interpretation of what the agency is required to do. The concern we'd have there, if we do not use all data and we create the 303D list and send it to EPA for approval, that in fact they may not approve it because we did not use all data. And that might create an opportunity for EPA to do Oregon's list for them, for the state of Oregon. And so we certainly feel like it's better for the state of Oregon to take care of this matter rather than turning it over to the federal agency. Madam Chair, that's the conclusion and the two main points that I wanted to bring up in terms of House Bill 3076.
Thank you. Other questions? We appreciate your testimony and your time. And are there other persons who wish to speak on House Bill 3076? If not, we'll close the hearing on 3076. and we are adjourned.